Welcome to the Follow My Lead podcast, where we transfer stories and best practices of today's leaders to the leaders of tomorrow with your host, John Eads.
Today, I'm joined by Brian Delaney, a co-founder at Skookum Digital Works here in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's a fascinating story, an 11-year journey about building one of the premier technology companies in the country. They're really big on culture and developing people. Brian talked about doing great work with great people. That really stood out to me a great deal. They have a real thirst for knowledge and growth in the organization. They're big on people. So without further ado, here's my interesting conversation with Brian Delaney. Just a quick housekeeping item. This podcast is brought to you by LearnLoft.com, an online learning company focused on developing the modern professional. Check out their brand new Getting Leadership Ready program at LearnLoft.com/individual. All right, Brian, thanks for joining. We appreciate you being here.
Oh, thanks for having me, John.
So for the audience that doesn't know who Brian Delaney is or the company Skookum, tell me a little bit about your story, how you got here, and where you are today.
Sure. So I think just maybe starting off with kind of a description of who Skookum is, and then I can kind of backtrack and, you know, how we got to where we are today. But Skookum is a innovation consultancy, and we look for entrepreneurial or visionary change agents within mid-market organizations or Fortune 500 who are looking to solve business problems through technology, and they can't find that solution off the shelf, and you know they have a very unique and tricky problem, and they need a custom solution, and they need a combination of creativity and deep technical expertise. So that's where we came in. But you know, Skookum was founded about 11 years ago. My co-founder James Hartzell and I, we worked for the Department of Defense as contractors for a while. We built a lot of custom software there. And we just saw a lot of inefficiency with the way business units were ran and not really leveraging technology. Both of our dads kind of had a entrepreneurial bug that we experienced growing up. So we'd always talked about being entrepreneurs. So, you know, one day you just decide you're going to go hang a shingle and see if you can try this thing out. And here we are 11 years later, and it's been working out pretty well for us.
What happened originally? So you decided with James, both working as contractors. What was that first conversation like that said, we not only think we personally can go make this happen, but was there an event? Was there a problem that you saw? What was that thing that really made you take the leap?
So we, within our jobs at the DOD, we were tasked to work on software, but outside of that, we saw real gaps in the technology that was used within that business space. And so, you know, from time tracking to procurement to inventory, we just started building custom systems. And, you know, we had the notion that we can probably go do this as a business for other folks. So, you know, we ended up leaving and starting the company, but it's, I guess the story is similar to what I hear from a lot of other entrepreneurs. We certainly had brains, but we ended up having a lot more balls than brains. So you just take that leap of faith and you get out there and it's like, okay, now we're out here and we have to, you know, we're only going to eat what we kill. So let's go find a way, you know, what's our niche? You know, who's the market we're going to serve? What's the value prop for them? And so we were figuring a lot of that stuff out on the fly. We did not figure that out before we started. So that's something, if I had to go back and do differently, I probably would have changed that. But then, like all businesses, it became this constant iteration and evolution of getting to the point where we are today.
And do you remember the first time that you hired somebody for a full-time position? And what was that? What were you looking for then versus maybe what you're looking for now?
Well, at that point early on, you maybe the person is not going to be the founder, right? But they still have to have a very deep entrepreneurial spirit, right? Because they're still taking a chance. And I remember the first guy that we hired, he was leaving a very stable job. And so the sales pitch actually went on for quite a while to get him to, hey, come take this chance with us. And, you know, we could go a lot of different directions, but we're still trying to figure things out. So you got to find the right person that's able to take that leap, right? And the person that is going to, we're going to hire next, they don't, it's not as risky a move for them, right? So the whole sales pitch, you know, what you're going to offer them, the story that you tell them is vastly different when it's employee number one versus employee number, I don't know, what 100 or something, whatever we're on right now.
But are the qualities the same, right? I mean, the sales pitch to those people are definitely different. What about, are the skills, the entrepreneurial mindset, the innovative thinking, the creative thinking, are those still the same in employee 100 as they were number one or two?
Yeah, I think so, because at the end of the day, you're really talking about the core values of your company, and those derive from the founders. James and I have been there from the beginning, so the key elements that we always put supreme value on are still the same today as they were then.
You guys are probably known in the local community as maybe the most innovative slash creative group of software development resources in the region, maybe even in, you know, up there in the country. What do you accredit that to?
I think it really goes back to the core values and just, you know, James and I not settling, but then always kind of having that drive to instill that in our employees and have them, you know, bring that to the table. You know, people, we want to solve big problems for folks, right? We don't want to do the 5-year-long ERP installation that you have to throw 50 developers at it. There's plenty of opportunities for people to work on those kind of jobs, and that, but that's not within our company. So what we always sought out, even from the beginning, is give us the very unique, difficult, challenging problems that you don't know where to take to, right? You can't, you don't know that you can take it to IT. There's no off-the-shelf product. And I think that attracts a certain type of individual, and I think that's what we've been able to build our company around.
What are some of the things that you do, maybe between you and James, or you and your team now at Skookum, what are you, some of the things that you do to help them, to challenge them and to help them get better, since you're looking for people with that certain mindset?
Well, we talk a lot about our core values, embrace change and thirst for growth. So those are two key ones that I think drive a lot of the people within our organization. And how do you, you know, if you come here and you're passionate about the things we do, how do you constantly get better? One thing I've done personally is I try to get involved with organizations of peers. So one group that I've joined is called EO, Entrepreneurs Organization. Another group is called Young Entrepreneurs Council, YEC. Those have been really valuable for me because it just broadens my perspective on the challenges that my peer group is running against. And a lot of us, we don't have the same businesses, right? But so it's very interesting to hear challenges that I'm likely not going to run into from their perspective, but there's always an application back to my business. And I'm just constantly on the lookout for coaches and mentors as well, particularly as we grow the business and reach different plateaus. You know, who are the different people that have been there, done that, that I could learn from? I think, especially as an entrepreneur, anytime you can shorten the learning curve, it has significant value to you and your company.
Is there anything that you and James do, or do you, what's the relationship there like? You know, is it, do you push each other still? I mean, 11 years is a long time with someone every single day. Is that been a positive personal relationship for you? And then now, how do you use that relationship since it's kind of a team environment? What are your employees, what do you think your employees look to that relationship for?
you know, we get together on a regular basis. We've always managed to have kind of a standing lunch hour once a week. And I don't know, the communication has always been really good with us, but I think at the end of the day, anytime you're going to have a partnership, like, you have to put everything on the table. It comes down to transparency and trust. And if those two things don't exist, I just don't see how any partnership can work, whether that's marriage or business or whatever.
Do you think that transparency and trust between you and James is one of the reasons why the culture there is so good?
Potentially. You know, I think that's the approach we've always had, right? Is like, let's do great work with great people. And I mean, at the end of the day, James and I talk about, we got to put our heads on the pillow at night, and we want to know that we did right by people, and we want people to have that same attitude. And yeah, I think it filters down, and I think people value it.
How do you look at yourself as a leader? I mean, where did you learn your own? You have, what, now 100 employees or thereabout, somewhere in that region, clearly are looked up to in the organization as both a co-founder but a leader of people. What's leadership mean to you?
I mean, it's very cliche in my mind, right? But lead by example is kind of a driving philosophy of mine. You know, the way we're structured here is kind of teams, you know, sales team, delivery team, things of that nature. Some of the things I've seen from other entrepreneur friends, right, is their ego gets very involved in their leadership style. And I think that's very detrimental to having a team rally behind you. And I think a lot of folks think that they, you know, they're the founder or they have this title, they need to be the best on the team, or everybody needs to fall in line behind them. And I just fundamentally disagree with that notion. You know, everybody can contribute to this team. And I guess that's how I've always looked at sports as well. So I think a lot of, you know, the upbringing playing sports plays into leadership, because at the end of the day, you're still playing with a team. So how do you align motivations and lead people and show them what's right and what's wrong and keep them inspired?
Idea that you have of team. Does James share that same philosophy? And does it permeate in each division or group within the business? And if so, how proactive are you to ensure that that happens in each division?
So, yes, I think all our leadership team shares it. I do think it permeates down through the organization. In terms of how proactive we are, we talk about it as a leadership team, but it's kind of left to each individual leader to implement that within their own team. But, you know, we have talked in the past about you know, a lot of businesses say we're family, and that's a noble thought, right? But at the end of the day, we view it as we're a team, not a family. And so we're together in this period in time, and we want to go get some wins. And, you know, sometimes you have to lift your teammates up, and sometimes they're going to lift you up. But, you know, you're stuck with family, right? You're not stuck with a team forever. So just kind of having that awareness around what it means to be a team, I think drives a lot of the decisions and things that we do around here.
One of the key things that they've talked about over the years is the importance of accountability and structure. I saw a thing this week from Tom Izzo, the college basketball coach from Michigan State, talking about how he believes that players crave accountability and structure and how important it is. Part of the knock when it comes to startup environments or new age millennial kind of culture organizations, it's kind of every man for themselves. How do you feel about culture and accountability? I mean, accountability and structure, and is that a big part of the world at Skookum? And if so, you know, how are some of the ways that you hold people accountable?
You know, I think just like everything else, when you start a business, you take a lot of chances. And I think we got a lot of stuff wrong on that in the beginning. But, you know, I hate to kind of keep beating this same notion, but it really comes back to being a team. I mean, yeah, there's, you know, code checks you can do, and, you know, people want to make sure that the person coding next to them is a quality person, a quality, coder, all of that stuff. But aside from that, if you step back from the tactical, the togetherness, the sense of being that is created from being on a team almost has built-in accountability there. You know, if you've played sports in the past and you really, for whatever reason, hated being on a team or didn't like playing the sport, you really didn't care what you did and what your result was. So ultimately, that made you not a great team member. Conversely, if you're on a team, you know, you're passionate about the sport or the team or the coach, like you're bought into what they're trying to accomplish. And so you don't want to let the man down who's next to you. So I think there's a lot of that in play within our culture. And it's a higher level thing than just, you know, how many GET requests did you have this week, or, you know, how many bugs came out of your code that you submitted. So, you know, those are all tactical metrics, but I think if you can align with a higher purpose, it has a lot better impact for the individual and for the organization.
So much of your work is tangible. It's right there in front of you, a lot of the employees, whether you either get the job done or you don't, right?
Yeah.
Is that one of the reasons why, maybe from an accountability standpoint, you don't have to worry as much about it, because you either make the number from a sales perspective or you don't, or you either write good enough code or you don't?
I mean, I deal with it on the sales side, right? We're structured as a team group when we're selling. And so, I mean, looking at it from my perspective, you know, you hire somebody into the job, you set the expectations, but that's a two-way conversation, right? Like, mm-hmm. I've hired you and I have this expectation for what you're going to do in this role, but what are your expectations for me as your boss or your company? And I think that if you can map that out and have a clear definition around that, then work towards that. Anytime you start to diverge from that path, it's very easy to come back and have a conversation around it. And sometimes that conversation is like, hey, man, what happened here? Where can I help you? How can we get better? Or maybe the conversation's like, hey, man, I'm not sure this is working out. Or is your heart really into it? Is this where you want to be? What are your aspirations? If it's not at Skookum, how can I help you elsewhere? So I think, again, it comes back to that transparency and trust that's created within the team environment.
Do you like having those conversations, Brian? I mean, those are difficult conversations to have, particularly for someone, you know, that, you know, you're a young man. How do you mind those conversations?
I don't mind them at all. I mean, the thing is, we can have that conversation now, or we can avoid it and spend another 6, 9, 12 months being miserable around each other. or we can correct it now, and we can go both get on the right path that's going to make us both equally happy and satisfied. I mean, chasing happiness or satisfaction is a choice that you make. And, you know, attaining anything of value has its challenges, and it's not easy. So I just look at it, that conversation, in the same context.
Do you feel more fulfilled in the work that you do because you lead other people? I mean, you might not have proactively thought about it, but, you know, as you think back on your 11 years at Skookum, does that bring joy to your life to see others, you know, achieve things or get better? And maybe did you expect it to, if it does?
I don't know. I mean, like you said, I haven't really thought about it that explicitly. I guess I think about it in the context of going back to the team thing, right? If we can get aligned and we can do things together that are wins, and we're excited about that, but in our time together, you get further down the path and whatever you're trying to achieve, and I get further down the path and whatever I'm trying to achieve, then it's a win for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess that's the way I look at it. I don't really kind of look at it like, hey, I led 4 people this week and, you know, did X, Y, and Z. It's just, I think when it's over, and I'm talking about in terms of, you know, termination or separation with an employee in a company. If you can look back and you say, hey, I learned a good deal from you. You learned a good deal from me. We created some value. We had some wins. Like, that's a success in my mind.
What advice would you give to a young professional that has a desire to lead others?
I think, you know, I used the phrase earlier, but I like the notion of leading by example. And I think that's how you start. You know, you raise your hand, you step forward, and you take the opportunity to show folks around you, you know, how you'd like things done or what's the path forward. And I think if you're doing that and you're doing that effectively, you naturally start to morph into a leadership role. People start looking at you, coming to you for advice. But then, you know, how do you delegate responsibility back down to them? How do you lift them up? How do you let them have wins? Because I think that's a really critical part of being a leader is helping other people grow around you and grow past you.
Well, and so on some a little lighter stuff, I know you have 3 children at home. What's harder, leading at home or leading a growing technology business?
It's like I said earlier. I mean, you know, if you boil it down to the simplest manner, I can pick the people at Skookum. I can't pick my family. So I think, you know, I've got 3 kids under 7, and just the challenges of watching a human develop. And, you know, aside from that, their own individual personalities. And, you know, if you go back so far as to talk about core values, but you're trying to instill stuff like that into a 4-year-old that doesn't really understand abstract concepts, you know, and that's kind of where your brain sits, which is where mine does for the most part. It's been a real challenge to boil things down to the level that a 4-year-old can digest and, you know, steer them in the right direction. So, it's been a lot more challenging for me at home than it has been at work.
I don't think either of them are easy. They're just different, right?
Right.
You take a lot of the same principles at work as you do at home, and you care maybe even more at home, which sometimes makes things a little bit harder.
I read this book recently. It's called The Secrets of Happy Families. And it was just a really interesting book because it talked about the deliberate nature that good families put in place to have a great familial experience. Everything from defining family core values to defining traditions, right? Like the dad or the mom would come up with something that they loved to do, and so they would make sure it was a tradition, and they did it, you know, every year or every month or whatever it was. And then it's not long after that, it just becomes a tradition to the kids. And I don't know why, but reading that, I was like, oh, I never thought of how deliberate traditions could be, right? You can start traditions that your kids will cherish. So just thinking strategically about your family, I thought it was an interesting perspective.
Well, and it sounds like you're thinking pretty strategically about your business and your leadership and your own personal development as well. So it doesn't surprise me that you went out of your way to find a book that is going to help lead your family. Because it sounds like you and James are doing a great job leading Skookum and the employees that work for it. And so we appreciate you being here. How can people find Skookum? How do you spell it? I know people are probably thinking, what is Skookum?
Yeah, so we'll answer that question quick. It's a Chinook Indian word. It means bold, brave, superior. So a lot of times up in that area, they also call Sasquatch a Skookum. So that's our name, and you can reach us at skookum.com, SKOOKUM.com.
Okay. So what you're saying is Skookum, you guys are superior to every other software development company in the world. Is that right?
Well, I mean, if you're going to give us that kind of endorsement, John, I'm not
Well, no, Brian, I really appreciate you being here, sharing some insight. It's an interesting story that you and James have been on, and I know firsthand from here in Charlotte, there's a lot of people that love what it is that you guys do, the culture that you bring, the commitment that you guys have shown to the local community and to the talent in the area. So one, we appreciate everything you've done for Charlotte, and two, we appreciate you sharing some good tips and leadership tricks to our audience. So thanks.
Sure thing, man. Thanks for the opportunity.
All right, we'll talk soon. Thanks, Brian.
Okay.